We started Ecclesiastes last Sunday. We met the preacher in verse 1. We heard his big idea in verse 2, vanity of vanities. Hevel was our key word, meaning breath or vapor. Life under the sun is fleeting. It's subject to futility, and the inconsistencies this side of Eden can get absurd. Wisdom sees life's futilities and navigates them by fearing God and enjoying His gifts. We also heard a poem about life under the sun, but today we shift from poetry to autobiography. The preacher takes a quest, and he wants to discover, chapter 2, verse 3 says, what is good for the children of man. So where should we look for true, lasting gain? Maybe you've found yourself on a similar quest. I remember Jim Carrey in 2016. He announced the winner for Best Motion Picture Comedy at the Golden Globes. And he was introduced as two-time Golden Globe winner Jim Carrey. And he steps to the mic, the applause settles, and he says, "Thank you. I am two-time Golden Globe winner Jim Carrey. You know, when I go to sleep at night, I'm not just a guy going to sleep. I'm two-time Golden Globe winner Jim Carrey going to get some well-needed shut-eye. And when I dream, I don't just dream any old dream. No, sir. I dream about being three-time Golden Globe winning actor Jim Carrey, because then I would be enough. It would finally be true, and I could stop this terrible search for what I know ultimately won't fulfill me. But these are important, these awards." You catch his humor and sarcasm. And the reason we chuckle is that he's touching on truth. We are searching for fulfillment, for the good life. And in our search, we often tell ourselves, if I just had that one more thing, if I just had greater knowledge, then I'd be able to solve life's mysteries. Or if I just worked harder and surrounded my life with more pleasures, then life wouldn't feel so empty. Or if I could just control my future, then I'd be fulfilled. But in our passage today, we encounter a man who had it all, who tried it all, and still couldn't escape vanity under the sun. Whatever is fleeting cannot fulfill. Whatever is fleeting cannot fulfill. That's what the preacher discovers on his quest. Let's read it together. Chapter 1, verse 12. I, the preacher, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight. What is lacking cannot be counted. I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is but a striving after wind. For in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself, but behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom. And how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I also had great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the sons of man. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. And so I turned to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do who comes after the king? Only what has already been done. Then I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, as there is more gain in light than in darkness. The wise person has his eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I perceive that the same event happens to all of them. And I said in my heart, what happens to the fool will happen to me also. Why then have I been so very wise? And I said in my heart that this also is vanity. For of the wise as of the fool, there is no enduring remembrance, seeing that in the days to come, all will have been long forgotten. How the wise dies just like the fool. So I hated life, because what was done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is vanity and a striving after wind. I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity. So I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun, because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not toil for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. What has a man from all the toil and striving of heart with which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow, and his work is a vexation. Even in the night, his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? For to the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner, he has given the business of gathering and collecting, only to give to the one who pleases God. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. So verse 12 begins like verse 1 did last week. He says, I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem. And given this title and the following context, we're meant to think of King Solomon. First Kings forms the backdrop to our passage. And it's there in 1 Kings that we learn how God blessed King Solomon with wisdom beyond measure. with breadth of mind like the sand on the seashore. And also his riches were such that no other king compared with him. The weight of gold that came to Solomon in 1 year was 666 talents, worth $2.5 billion today. Solomon made silver, it says, as common in Jerusalem as stone. He excelled all the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom. And yet five times in our passage, he compares his great achievements to striving after wind. Life under the sun failed to give him the fulfillment he tried to gain from it. And if that's true for someone like Solomon, with resources, wisdom, and power that you will never know, what does that mean for us in our own quest for gain? Well, let's find out by looking at the first part of Solomon's quest, verses 12 to 18. Solomon's quest for gain in wisdom or knowledge. Verse 13, he says, I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. And when he says wisdom, we might race to wisdom as fear of the Lord. Ecclesiastes will address that later, but here wisdom is to be taken in a more limited sense. Derek Kidner describes it as the best thinking that man can do. God blessed Solomon with superior wisdom. In 1 Kings 4, people of all nations came to hear the wisdom of Solomon. From trees to animals, from architecture to philosophy, from production to foreign relations, Solomon, it says, was wiser than all others. And so using that wisdom, he now searches. He gives his whole being to searching out all that is done under heaven. And what does he find? It's an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I've seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after wind. Vanity. Right? So he recalls that theme of vanity from verses 1 to 11. We discussed how the Hebrew word, hevel, included not just the idea of fleeting, but also the idea of futility. And we also talked about how God kept his word to Adam. God plunged the world into all kinds of frustrations because of sin. And verse 14 reflects on that reality. Because of sin, God has given the children of Adam an unhappy business. And his point is that no matter how wise you might be, you can't fix what's broken. At least in any ultimate way. That's why he cites the proverb in verse 15, what is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. Later in chapter 7, verse 13, he says, consider the work of God, who can make straight what he has made crooked. Some things in life you'll never be able to fix or figure out. Injustices that won't rectify, conflicts that won't resolve, budgets that won't balance, governments too twisted to unravel, questions that will go unanswered. God has subjected the world to certain deficiencies that our knowledge will never truly and fully fix. Nor can wisdom help you escape what hurts. That's his point in verses 16 to 18. I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. Notice he's not just using wisdom now. Now he's assessing wisdom itself and its opposites. And the point is that he's left no stone unturned. Wisdom, folly, and everything in between. He took the philosophy class, he tested other worldviews, he passed the exams, he wrote the dissertations, he lectured in the halls. When the Queen of Sheba visited Solomon, it says she tested him with hard questions, and Solomon answered all her questions. There was nothing hidden from the king that he could not explain to her. Wouldn't you love that? A mind capable of answering life's toughest questions? If only I knew more about, you fill in the blank, then I'd be satisfied. The world itself says things like knowledge is power, education is the key to success, but Solomon says, I perceived that this also is but a striving after wind. Why? Verse 18. For in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. So in this life under the sun, the more you know, the more you hurt. And Solomon wrote that before we had smartphones in our pockets alerting us every hour to a new tragedy. Now, the answer is not, well, ignorance is bliss. That's not his point. Elsewhere in the book, he will speak of the advantages of wisdom and knowledge. What he's saying here is, don't go in thinking that by gaining more wisdom, you'll be immune to the world's vanity. Under the sun, even something as good as wisdom has limits. Well, maybe then it's in pleasures and projects. Solomon's quest takes us there next in verses 1 to 11. Verse 1, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. So you can picture Solomon sitting at a nice dinner, right? Swirling a glass of fine wine, listening to the likes of Jerry Seinfeld and Nate Bargatze. He gives himself to drink and to fun and games. And yet all the while, he keeps his wits about him. He's deliberate. He's intentional. In some ways, he's standing outside himself to observe the true effects of this hilarity and this alcohol. Asking, is it here? Is it here that I will find the good life? Nope. What about great works? In verse 4 on, he mentions houses, vineyards, gardens, parks, all kinds of fruit trees, pools to water the forest of growing trees. The wording evokes features from the Garden of Eden. Garden, fruit trees, gold. Solomon is trying to rebuild an Eden of his own. But notice even as he does it, he can't break free from his sin in Adam. Did you hear it? I built houses for myself. I made gardens for myself. I made pools for myself. I gathered silver and gold for myself. He's repeating what every generation attempts to do, use God's gifts for selfish gain. But it's certainly no lasting gain. Some of you might be seeking your fulfillment in something this life can give you. Or if you're not trying it, maybe you've entertained thoughts like if I only had more money, and if I only had more sex, and what if I tried drinking with my friends at school, and what I really need is the latest iPhone, and what I really need is a better house, and what I really need is a different spouse, and what I really need is people to serve me for once, and then I'll be happy. And Ecclesiastes is saying, don't even bother. Solomon has already gone there. He lived the dream. He had the servants, the sex, the silver, the singers. He kept his heart from no pleasure. And you know what he found? Verse 11, all was vanity and a striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. So he reached out to grasp gain, and all the works of his hands, they slipped right through his fingers. And so he turns again to consider wisdom. Like when you're searching for the car keys, not in the bag, not on the hook, not on the counter, not on the dresser. And so we go back to the bag, even though we emptied its contents earlier. Maybe I didn't look carefully enough, we think. Likewise, Solomon returns to wisdom in his quest, and lo and behold, well, he does find some gain. Verse 13, I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, as there is more gain in light than in darkness. The wise person has his eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. The wise see where they're going. They don't stumble and fall under the sun. Wisdom has clear advantages over folly. We're making progress. So he thought. Just as he did in chapter 1, verse 4, and in chapter 1, verse 11, Solomon cannot shake the reality of death. It says the same event happens to all. What happens to the fool will happen to me also. Why then have I been so very wise? Like, what's the point of pursuing wisdom? And I said in my heart that this also is vanity. For of the wise as of the fool, there is no enduring remembrance, seeing that in the days to come, all will have long been forgotten. How the wise dies just like the fool. So imagine one day, your loved ones will watch your casket lower into the earth. And they will weep, and they will walk away as the backhoe comes to fill another hole. And at the reception afterwards, people will share stories remembering maybe your love for family and your integrity at work, and your generosity to the poor. Maybe they put on your tombstone, wise and faithful. But right next to yours is another tombstone. Months before, they buried a fool. She wasted her days on parties and bad relationships. And you're both 6 feet under. Does that disturb you? If it doesn't disturb you, you're not taking Solomon's words seriously enough. He says, I hated life because what is done under the sun was grievous to me. For all is vanity and a striving after wind. Ah, but wait, you say. Surely what I leave behind counts. Maybe my fortune, my retirement, my legacy, everything I worked for. Surely that will remain. He says, don't count on it. Verse 18. I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool. And yet he will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity. So I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun, because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill, you could translate that success, maybe you're a successful guy, a successful woman, yet he must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not toil for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. What has a man from all the toil and striving heart with which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow, and his work is a vexation. Even in the night his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. So you can work your whole life, staying up late at night, grinding your fingers to the bone, getting more done than anybody else, but in the end, you cannot control what happens to all that you work for. And we don't have to look far beyond Solomon to see this play out. Solomon dies, his son Rehoboam reigns, 10/12 of the kingdom gone in a year. So what are you trying to gain from all your toil? Whatever is fleeting cannot fulfill. We need something that lasts, something unshakable. You know, in the ancient Near East, kings often published their achievements, much like Solomon does here. And as one scholar put it, writings like these showed that the king was extraordinary, indeed, better than anyone else. They were supposed to enhance respect for the king and memorialize his achievements forever. But here's the big difference with Ecclesiastes. Even the one king who truly surpassed all others in riches and wisdom, even he couldn't escape the vanity. Death eventually put an end to his wisdom and his achievements. If that's true for someone like Solomon, how much more for the rest of us? Brothers and sisters, we need someone greater than Solomon to solve our despair. And that someone is Jesus Christ. Jesus said, "The Queen of the South came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and behold, something greater than Solomon is here." Colossians chapter 2, verse 3 says that in him are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. And not simply the kind of wisdom to live the good life. Jesus had the kind of wisdom that began with the fear of the Lord. Jesus did not live to please himself. He said, "I always do the things that are pleasing to the Father," John 8:27. His wisdom didn't look like amassing the world's treasures and buying slaves to cater all his wants. Wisdom didn't take Jesus around suffering. It took him through it for our sake. Jesus' wisdom took the form of a slave, and he served us even to the point of death on a cross. Weak and foolish as it looked to mere human wisdom, Christ's cross became for us, 1 Corinthians says, the power of God and the wisdom of God, our righteousness, our sanctification, and our redemption. And more than that, all of Jesus' works, they produce lasting results. Death ended it all for Solomon, not so with Christ. All that he toiled to gain, it endured because death could not hold him in the grave. His reign is forever, his riches are forever, and one day when his kingdom floods the earth with God's presence, he will straighten all that is crooked, and he will remove all sorrow. So where then are we supposed to find fulfillment? Where can we find true and lasting gain? Where can we find what's good for the children of man? Not under the sun. but in a relationship with the one who is above the sun. Perhaps you've been on your own little quest for what is good. Perhaps you've tried to find fulfillment in the same things Solomon tried. Or maybe life's pleasures have become another way to smother that despairing voice inside your head that says, I hated life. Or maybe you're pumping your schedule full of overtime so that you don't have to stop long enough to consider what all that you will eventually lose. And Ecclesiastes is saying, I know you're tired. I see your despair. But you don't have to keep living this way. God has provided an answer for you in the person and work of Jesus Christ. He is the good you're looking for. He is God's answer for the children of man. So come to God through Him. And when that's true, when you know God and you come to God through Jesus, He transforms how you relate to everything else under the sun. The things of this world take on a whole new meaning, a whole new light, which brings us to our last point, the conclusion of this quest he is on. Notice Solomon's conclusion in verse 24. There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. So the Hebrew behind the word better in verse 24 is the same word behind good back in verse 3. Also, the same Hebrew word is behind the words find enjoyment in verse 24. Literally, make his soul see good. In other words, at the end of his quest, it seems that Solomon now understands what's good for the children of man. Eat, drink, make your soul see good in your toil. What? How did he go from saying, I hate all my toil, to saying a person should make his soul see good in his toil? Right? That whiplash has led some to conclude, this is nothing but mere resignation. Might as well live it up. Life's hard, then you die. But I don't think that's right. It doesn't square with the 7 times this book commends and sometimes commands the enjoyment of the world as gift. Yes, the preacher despairs about all that's groaning, but that doesn't mean the answer is cynicism or nihilism. Rather, the limitations of life under the sun open his eyes to the way the things of this world can be enjoyed as gifts from the only one in whom our true fulfillment can be found. To use an analogy from C.S. Lewis, they are like shafts of light pointing us to the sun. The goal isn't the shaft. The shaft directs us to the source. And likewise, things like warm apple pie and a seared ribeye and cool lemonade in August and rains that open the topsoil, beautiful sunsets, and holding your spouse's hand, the pleasures of intimacy, the laughter shared with friends, the paycheck you receive, the home you have, the job you will drive to on Monday, the knowledge to do your work with excellence, the child who hugs your neck, the music you sang this morning. All are gifts that point to your generous Creator. If anything should surprise us, this should surprise us right here in a world full of sin. If one sin hurled creation into the futilities that we are now experiencing, what does it say that our God gives us anything at all? When we have squandered His gifts and ignored His gifts and sometimes traded Him for the gifts. And yet every day, Acts tells us, He does good by giving you rains from heaven and fruitful seasons, satisfying your hearts with food and gladness. I want you to put your hand on your chest, right over your heart. Do you feel the thud? Ecclesiastes is saying two things at once. One, you've only got so many of those left. They're limited. And two, every single one of them are saying, gift, 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 gift. So what are you going to do with them? What is good for the children of man? Recognizing God's extravagant grace and enjoying His gifts. The preacher tells us, this also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from God, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? You might have noticed the preacher hadn't mentioned God since chapter 1, verse 13. And now he mentions God 6 times in 3 verses. The point? Apart from God, you can't enjoy anything in life as it's meant to be enjoyed. You're just going to keep using it, try to get what you want out of it, and it ain't going to work because you're enjoying it apart from Him. That's what we sang earlier, the line, no gift He gives will my love take except to love it for His sake. Apart from God, you can't enjoy anything in life as it's meant to be enjoyed. You will only strive and strive and strive and strive to gain something for yourself, and in the process, you will despair and you will forfeit everything. Verse 26 says, for to the one who pleases Him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner, He has given the business of gathering and collecting, only to give to the one who pleases God. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. What is vanity and a striving after wind? Busying yourself with all sorts of stuff apart from God. It's taking His gifts, and instead of seeing them as shafts of light from the Creator, we make them all about us. We turn life into a vain pursuit of gain for myself, for myself, for myself, for myself. Instead of aiming to please God with the things that He gives. Right, the Apostle Paul takes this same approach in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 17. He's instructing wealthy Christians. They got a lot of stuff. And he says, as for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. On God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. That sounds like Ecclesiastes. Life isn't about the riches you accumulate. It's about God, who gives us everything to enjoy. And when you approach life this way, you take God's gifts and you enjoy them for His sake. Some of you might be thinking, wait a minute here, all this enjoyment language, doesn't this lead to overindulgence? If anything, Overindulgence is a result of not enjoying God's gifts for what they are, but trying to get from God's gifts what they can never give. And that's why Paul goes on to tell them the rich are to do good and to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. Have you taken hold of that which is truly life? Or do you find life to be a striving after wind? Are you frustrated with life and telling yourself things like, I hate this? Well, Ecclesiastes was written to help you, make your soul see good. Where are you searching to find fulfillment? Where are you looking to find what's good for man? Whatever is fleeting cannot fulfill. But God is not fleeting. And He is our fulfillment. And He gives us the ability to enjoy life as gift, even with all of its frustrations under the sun. So come to Him through Jesus Christ and you will find what is good for the children of man. You will find that life isn't about striving for gain. It is about receiving as gift all that God gives. Let's pray together. Father, I do pray that as we come to the Lord's Supper, we would see the greatest gift of all that You have given, despite us squandering Your gifts and ignoring them. You have sent Jesus into the world for our sake to deliver us from this hevel and give to us true and lasting enjoyment. Help us think on that again now as we take the supper and sing. In Jesus' name, amen.